750,000 Muslims killed by Muslims. That would be, what, a quarter of the Palestinians? And no one cares. Nobody cares. Because no Jews, no news. Georgetown University, funding from Muslim nations. Now, the US taxpayer, okay, which gives funding to Middle East departments, is under 500,000. Funding from Muslim nations, $378 million. She's a Muslim member of the Muslim Brotherhood. Her father is deep into the Muslim Brotherhood. So is her mother.
Really?
They are propagandists for the Muslim Brotherhood.
Isn't she the one that dated the guy that got caught with, like, Kitty?
Yes.
With the
Yes.
Whoa, yep. I didn't know that. That makes sense.
She's named Hillary Clinton's shadow. She was the vice chair of Hillary's 2016 presidential campaign. She was personal assistant to Clinton's first presidential run in 2008. She would answer Hillary's cell phone. She had full access to Hillary's cell phone.
Wow. Okay, this is some, like, this is trippy. Welcome to Yoel's Hangouts podcast. We got a returning guest. Actually, what I'm going to do is I'm going to link above for you guys if you guys want to check out our interview, kind of going deeper into who he is and kind of what his background is. To keep a long story short, he has an extensive background in the Middle East doing, you know, defense contract work, some secretive stuff that I still have questions about, to be honest, that I don't think you're allowed to even speak about. But he does a lot of research. He's, you know, super smart guy. But today we're going to be covering the Islamic lobby. Now, a lot of you guys may not know what that is. I've known a little bit about it and seen his presentations about it as far as what it is and how it works. But there's so much to it that you guys are going to be thrilled about and are going to learn a lot about. So that being said, Lloyd, I'm going to pass it on to you. And if I have questions, which I probably will, I'll butt in.
Well, thank you very much for having me back. I trust the last show went very well, so it was worth having me on again. And but thank you for the privilege. Based on the discussion we've had, it would be interesting to take the principle of follow the money. And then on that basis, we can start to have, shall we say, a metric that actually gives us hard evidence as to what's happening, rather than just speculation, conspiracy theories. But what does the money tell us? Where does the money lead? And also, what does the money buy? Any thoughts before you run into this?
Yeah, I mean, I guess for me, like, the perspective that I wanted to tackle it or think about it is, before we had this conversation, and I was doing my own research before the war, but I mean, it was like a perfect masterclass of seeing the level of manpower accounts. It was like almost like they turned on a switch and there were like all of these colleges, all of these organizations that you would think have no connection to any sort of Middle East conflict. I have never seen this level of camaraderie, and knowing what I knew predicated on presentations you've done before, it just was like, whoa, like, this is real. And this is like deep ingrained into America. So I'm excited.
All right. Yep. I'll tell you what, let me do a quick run through of some introduction, some context, right? Where we're going to be talking about this. We need to ask, where's Islam infiltrated? Where have Muslims infiltrated? What organizations have they subverted? Now, I have showed this before. This is the Islamic KKK symbolism. The original KKK uniform had the Muslim crescent and star on it, right? This is a surviving photograph. You can see it here. This is the original Muslim crescent and star. And also, we have discussed briefly in the past, and I have discussed on my channel, Islamic occult connections. But notice, this is the same pose as you would see with Baphomet. We've already, I believe, discussed Baphomet in relation to Islam. And that's the same hermetic pose that you see there, right? You've got this here from the postcard. You see it again. Right now, we've also discussed Freemasons, and we've discussed the Shriners. Now, the Shriners are a Muslim organization, let's say. To become a Shriner, you must be a Freemason. Not all Freemasons are Shriners, but all Shriners are Freemasons. It's a higher Freemason, and of course, they have very strong Muslim symbolism. You'll see Arab, Arabia, you'll see here. Now, they always talk about how the Jews have infiltrated everywhere, but let's have a look at Islamic infiltration. This is Nile, this is Aladdin, right? This one says Almasi, whatever that is. Ararat, fine. These are President Harry S. Truman, J. Edgar Hoover, John Wayne, Gerald Ford, General Douglas MacArthur, Mayor of Chicago, Richard Daley, Hubert Humphrey, U.S. Vice President, John Diefenbaker, PM of Canada, President Warren Harding, right? These are all...
I have a question about this. So yep. It would, and just to kind of connect everything, and let me know if I get this wrong. Yep. I mean, a lot of people overlook the star and the moon symbol, but it's a very pagan symbol, right? I mean, you're talking yes. about the primary symbolism of your religion that you claim is like all about God and, you know, has no pagan,
it's Babylonian. Christians are the pagan. Babylon. It's literally the same symbolism as Babylon.
Yeah. So the connection is like essentially just, it's all pagan, essentially, is the messaging, correct. The perspective that I get.
Yeah, no, I've covered this in my discussion called Moonotheism. I go into detail. It's like 7 or 8 episodes, very detailed. I discuss the history of that region. So it is the same deity and the same symbolism as the original Babylonian deity, except just with, shall we say, more Arab characteristics. But it is the same religion. Here, of course, you've got Harry S. Truman. I'm just going to zoom into this. That we speak of, oh boy, the Jews are... in the White House, and they show pictures of the rabbis. Well, here you've got these men cosplaying as Muslims, these white men cosplaying as Muslims, also in the White House with one of their own. And these people have, and I've discussed this on my channel before, very strong Muslim symbolism, right? As we've seen,
you can and see just these because very they have men. Muslim symbolism, does that necessarily mean that they're, speaking or moving or, creating legislation on behalf of Islam, or is it just interesting that it's connected?
It could
that
be
way?
In your face and on the nose, or it could be they are unwitting dupes and tools. Mm. But why aren't they choosing Christian symbolism? Why aren't they choosing Mormon symbolism? Why aren't they choosing Buddhist symbolism? Why Muslim symbolism specifically? Mm. Right? And if you look at the oath that they swear when they come into the organization, it's to Allah. They swear an oath to Allah, the God of Muhammad. So they were so powerful that in 1952, Harry Truman and John F. Kennedy delivered their presidential campaign speeches at the Shrine in Pittsburgh. Let's have a quick run through of this. So these are their founders, right? The founders of the Shrine in America. Now, look at these big bushy-bearded white guys, okay? The ancient Arabic order of the nobles of the mystic shrine. Okay, this is the book on their origin. They were instituted by the Muhammadan Caliph Ali, whose name be praised, the cousin of the son-in-law, the cousin germain and son-in-law of the Prophet Muhammad. Allah favor and preserve him. The salutation of distinction among the faithful is Salam Alaikum, which is returned with Alaikum Salam. I believe that's the Buddhist greeting. I could be wrong. Might be Mormon as well, but I'm going to have to take that under advisement. Although I suspect slightly that may be very Muslim. And then, of course, I'll continue here. The Abu Ben Adam Keg Patrol. These are them with their little cars and, of course, the Keg Patrol. Here's Abu Ben Adam, the Shrine Mosque. I believe a mosque is where Buddhists go to pray. I could be wrong. Someone advise me later in the comments, but I believe a mosque is where Buddhists go. Mormons?
Yeah, I think so.
I think so. And you've got AAONMS, Abu Ben Adam. Okay. 1922, that's the building. It's a historic building. Now, Ibrahim Ibn Adam, also known as Ibrahim Balkhi, is one of the most prominent of the early Sufi saints. Now, of course, in Islam, the only saints are Sufis, right? Sufi saints are the Muslim saints. And, of course, supposedly his first spiritual guide was a Christian monk called Simeon. That's nice, right? And, of course, AAONMS is an anagram of a mason. And this is the Mecca Temple. Right, at 56th Street, 6th Avenue, New York. There you go, Mecca Temple. History of the AAONMS, Walter Fleming with his little Muslim skull cap thing there. As you can see, that's the fez, but it's got the crescent, moon, and star. Okay, and the current imperial potentate of Shriners International, this guy with, again, this is also the cult of ISIS symbol, if you think of it that way, with the Islamic sword, right? And, of course, they met at 114 East 13th Street. There are 114 surahs in the Quran, right? And the Arabic shrine was born. The temple is called Mecca. I believe Mecca is where Buddha was born. I could be wrong. Let me know.
Right? I have a question because one of the I was watching something about Masons, and they were talking about how you can be a like Catholic or
The Catholic popes have written more encyclicals against Freemasonry than any other movement, because they call Freemasonry subversive and satanic. You cannot be a Catholic and a Freemason; you will be excommunicated. That's a very
it makes
clear
sense direction. Because he was trying to explain essentially to the guy that was talking, that was essentially interviewing him, being like, "So essentially, you guys swear allegiance to Masonry, but not to Jesus. That doesn't make sense." But it kind of is similar to how Islam is, where in all reality, they try to pretend like Jesus is the main thing, but he's really not. It's more about something else. It's actually way more satanic. So it makes sense how there's an overlap.
I spoke to Masons at a shrine once. They will tell you that you are free to worship your own God as long as you have a God. So maybe you want to worship the flying spaghetti monster. That's, I guess, okay. But... you know, you have to ask yourself, maybe the flying spaghetti monster wants you to have cheese, and maybe the other guy's God thinks cheese is haram. Then what do you, you know? So one has to wonder, you know. Now, notice the Masonic Sword of Allah. This is a Masonic lodge, right? This is where the shriners may also meet. Now, notice these are minarets here. See the minaret style chairs, Muslim minarets with the same symbolism. This guy with the symbol. And notice the crossed swords of Allah. This is the ISIS flag or the Saudi, you know, this is the flag of jihad. Notice the symbolism here, right? Very Muslim. And also this is the Jolly Roger of the pirates, because Islamic piracy.
Wow.
See, at a distance, this looks like that. Let's just superimpose the two, and you'll see that at a distance, you would very easily mistake the one for the other.
Yeah.
All right. Now, of course, the Masonic Sword of Allah, we've all seen this little picture, right? And then, of course, the Islamic Temple of California. Now, this is the Islam Temple. Oh, my golly, they're not Muslims. They're just talking about Islam. Pilgrimage to Sacramento, March 13th, 1915. And here they're throwing out the government, and these guys are moving in to take over the Califatefornia government. Wow. Interesting. Wow. Caliph. The Caliph of Fornia. Who knows? And also, what does a crypto Jew look like? Common question. Well, what does a crypto Muslim look like? Maybe that's a valid question. Now, these guys are doing something, certainly, definitely one of the pictures that I've ever seen.
What in the world is going on here?
The word centipede did not cross my mind. Now, wow. Los Angeles Shriners Arab Patrol. Oh, Shriners Arab Patrol. Okay. And it says here, patrol from Al Malaika Temple, Los Angeles. Right, ancient Arabic order of the nobles of the mystic shrine. Now let's have a look at Sufi dancing. Let's have a look at a bunch of Sufis doing their dance, because this is them dancing, and that's what the dance looks like. It's just sheer coincidence that these Muslims are doing exactly the same dance. It's, you know, it's got nothing to do with Islam, obviously. You know.
Ooh.
Obviously, just sheer coincidence.
What in the world? That's weird.
Yeah, so you understand. So I'll just leave that at that. That's enough of that, just to give us an overview of maybe when we have additional facts, we can form a different opinion. And sometimes we're not given the information.
A lot of people say that Islam is a governmental structure, and you can kind of see that in the hadiths, right? So a lot of people may see it as like a big stretch to think, oh, there's a Muslim lobby, like there's an Islamic lobby, like that's a huge stretch. But if you actually know, you know, even just a little bit, or do a little bit of research, you realize it's not that big of a stretch.
Okay, well, look, I have done the research, and it's not a stretch. Let's have a look. Okay, I'll show this, and then we'll jump into the Arab lobby. So Islam is a deen. That's the correct term for it, D-I-N or D-E-E-N. It's a socio-political system. It is not a religion. It embodies perspectives on existence, life, society, and socio-political system. It is a complete and competing ideology, right, with against capitalism, against Western democracy, and so on, and a system of life and society. It's a political ideological system. It is also communal, like communism, socialism, fascism. So for Muslims, Islam is a superior ideology because it's perfect, comes from Allah, therefore towers over all other isms, right? It's a political framework for managing mankind's affairs. So the linguistic meaning, now the Al-Qamus al-Muhit and the Lisan al-Arab are the two most famous classical Arabic dictionaries. Al-Qamus al-Muhit was the source for Lane's lexicon, which is one of the most famous, if not the best known, I believe, academic lexicon for Arab English translations. And they state, both of these state, there are four meanings of the word deen. One, subjugation and dominance, which includes ownership, property rights. Remember, in the US, they would say ownership is 9/10 of the law. Government, administrative or legislative authority. Do you see religion in there? Spirituality?
No, I do not.
Obedience and bondage. Subordination and dominance under the power of others. Those others being the Muslims. Do you see spirituality, religion, love of God, fellow man?
No, I don't.
Rules and regulations, doctrine, ideology, tradition, or optionally religion. Tenth on the list, reward and repayment, justice and accountability. Now let's see. The first meaning, according to this, is subjugation or dominance, administrative or legislative authority. To put pressure to be obedient or using power to enslave or to make one obedient. Do you enjoy being enslaved or made obedient through force?
Nah.
You don't? Well, then you're obviously not a Muslim. You Islamophobe for not wanting this. In Arabic, dantuhum fadanu means I subjugated them so they obeyed me. Okay, I'm sure that doesn't mean what it says it means. I ruled or governed upon him. That would be politics. Are you seeing anything about love thy neighbor?
No, I'm not.
So Dayan is used to indicate a person who dominates and rules over a state, a nation, or a tribe. That would be political. Am I reading that right?
Yeah. And of course. Makes sense.
Yeah. So obedience, bondage, subordination, and domination by someone, and bearing humiliation under subjugation and power of the Muslims. So al-Din does not mean religion. It means obedience.
And the sources that you have for this are in the Hadiths or?
You can look this up on Muslim websites, this one. For instance, look up the meaning of the word deen. Now, the original site, after I started posting this in my videos and making public posts about this, they took the original site down. The original article was removed from the internet. It's still available. It's in a couple of places. And of course, I've captured enough of it for, you know, as well before it disappeared down the memory hole. But notice, Islam is a deen, right? Ownership, government, administrative authority. Notice, religion is number 10. We're always focusing on number 10 here, but we're missing the first 9. Now, look, this depends how you define this. You could put it lower down, but it really depends how you define it. Now, deen also means law in Hebrew, right? Islam is the deen or haq, meaning the religion of truth. Now, you've got the word haq. Okay, so they've obviously borrowed this and then they've completely inverted it from the biblical meaning, let's say. However, the deen or haq means that they are the religion of truth, the religion of rightness. Whereas Islam says that Christianity and Judaism are the religions of falsehood, the deen al-batil. They are the deen or haq, we are the deen al-batil. Al-batil means the false, the void, the irrelevant, but the false. The false meaning in that it is false religion because al-batil is also one of the names of Satan. So we follow the religion of Satan.
Now, a lot of what I will say, like in the Quran, for example, it'll have a lot of contradictory terminology. Like it'll say, you know, the people of the book, you know, they hold the authority, Christians, the Jews, you know, use them as a reference for what's right and what's good. And obviously that narrative kind of changes later in the Quran. So can you maybe explain the confusion when it comes to that? Because I know that it says good things in some places, but also completely homicidal, violent things in another.
The Quran, let me see that, how I want to define that. When they call us the people of the book, they also call, I cannot remember the name of the group, and now that you mention it, but there was a group of Gnostics, of pagan Gnostics that lived in Haran, in that area. Haran would be just over the border of Syria into Turkey. Islam also calls them a Muhammad Sabi. Islam also calls these Sabaeans. Now, we don't know for exact, we're not entirely sure if the Quran is, they refer to Sabi. We don't know if they mean the Sabians or the Sabaeans. The Sabaeans are Yemeni pagans who worship the moon god Sin, right? Or known as Makkah, Al-Makkah. So hold on, I'll just type that up. Why not? Okay, so let me do this. Al-Makkah. Have you heard of a city in Mecca called, a city in Arabia called Mecca, Makkah? Al-Makkah. Al-Makkah, the lighter QQ sound is the Yemeni Arabic dialect. In Arab, in the Arab dialect of Saudi Arabia, it would be Makkah. Right? So the god of Arabia was Al-Makkah. That's what the Yemenis worshipped. Right? That was the moon god of Arabia, including including what is today, what would be called Saudi Arabia and Mecca. So I'm sure that's just a sheer coincidence. Now, Al-Makkah was the name of the Babylonian moon god Sin, was just the Arab version of the Babylonian moon god Sin, or Shin.
Mm.
So now, there are two groups. Now, the guys who worshipped Al-Makkah are the Sabaeans. These are Yemenis, right? Sabaeans, you would know them as Queen of Sheba.
Mm.
Right? The story of Solomon. Then, of course, you have the Sabians. Now, the Sabians are Gnostics, effectively. These are Gnostics. These are not Christians, but the Quran regards them as Christians. It calls them also people of the book. Now, of course, these are heretical Gnostics. These are by no means Christians. Now, in the Hadiths, Muhammad is called a Sabi. Muhammad is explicitly called a Sabi. Right, let me just find that reference for you, because that might be interesting. Let me get that, and the audience might find this interesting. When was that? Right, so briefly then, I'm going to have to be very brief about this. What did I do here? So this is one of the hadiths in Sahih Bukhari, right? These are the most trusted, most authoritative of the Islamic hadiths. Now, the Sabians of Iran used to make a yearly pilgrimage to the pyramids of Egypt. Now, Maimonides, that's the very famous Jewish sage, says that the Sabians are remnants of the ancient Egyptian priests who practiced hieroglyphic magic. Now, of course, the Sufi do claim that after they conquered that part of the world and they took, there was a very large center of magic, a university of magic. They converted it to a great mosque and they took all of the magical idea, well, the magical books, and they took them to Spain. That's supposedly the claim. And they claim to be the inheritors of the ancient Egyptian mystery religion, right? Now, of course, then you have Hermes Trismegistus, who is the deity, who's a deity that comes from Egypt, also from Greece, who is supposed to be an ancestor of Muhammad, who is the one very first, shall we say, very first prophets in Islam. And he brought the wisdom, the hikmah. Now, for instance, here's this hadith. She asked where, they said, to Allah's messenger, right? She said, do you mean the man who is called the Sabi with a new religion? They replied, yes, the same person, so come along. So Muhammad in the hadith is called a Sabi. The Sabi is basically a Gnostic, a pretend Christian, shall we say, but he's not a Christian. So the people of the book refers to also non-Christian Gnostics. So they had no idea what a Christian was. So there's contradiction there. There's this difficulty that we've all got to try and figure out. But Muhammad here is basically called a fake Christian, not a Muslim. So,
and a Gnostic is essentially somebody that, to make it like in dumb language that I can understand, is like someone that just believes in like nonsense of like things that don't even need to actually have been seen or proven.
Judaism has the same problem with the Samaritans. The Samaritans claim that they're the original Jews, that they are the ones who have the original Bible, that they've got the oldest Bible. Sure, they don't have it exactly right now because their Bible only dates from hundreds and hundreds of years after the original Bible was written, but I swear to God, my Bible was older. It's actually 600 years older than yours. We just don't have a copy right now, but your Bible is fake. And as you know, that's so. This is Samaritan problem for the Jews, and you've got the same problem with the Gnostics claiming to be the original Christians. And the Quran provides the Sabaeans with a religious status comparable to that of the Jews and Christians. Now here it says Sabaeans. These are Yemeni worshippers of the moon god from Babylon. Now Babylonians were not Christians. Now, this is the encyclopedia of the Quran. And then, of course, you get other references to the Sabis. The Sabis are Gnostics. We know they're Gnostics. They're not Christians. So
okay. Can we define Gnostics before we move forward, just to make it...
Gnostics are an offshoot, it would seem, from the Hermetics, from Hermes Trismegistus. He was supposedly is a deity, a man that became a deity. The story is all over the place that hails from roughly the same time as Abraham. He's roughly supposedly contemporaneous with Abraham. He brought wisdom. to the world. He brought the hikmah, and he's now one of the, he's actually known as Idris in Islam. He is one of the very first, prophets that come, that is in Islam. And he brings the hikmah, he brings the wisdom, and he's one of the ancestors of Muhammad. And so the Gnostics are a group that really formed in the fourth century. All of their books really are formed in the fourth century. That's when their religion finalized. They are a pseudo-biblical movement that comes out of Christianity, but they have some very crazy ideas. Like they have, in the Nag Hammadi scrolls, they find something like 50 scrolls with 45 different sects, and each of these have a completely radically different idea. They have Jesus never existed. Jesus did exist, but he was a phantom. Jesus was just a good man who did nice things. Jesus was, and then they have, you know, Jesus was the companion. Jesus is a lower archon than God. He lives in a different realm, but he then has to somehow merge with Sophia, who's one of the lower archons who made the demiurge called Yahweh, who made the world, and the world is evil. And that was a mistake. And he has to somehow kiss her so that they can merge with this spiritual sexual union. It's a whole complete mess. And if you read through the Gnostics,
Are there any Gnostics left? And if so, where are they?
Yeah, they're all of, well, Islam claims explicitly to be a Gnostic religion. And they are the Gnostics, but Islam claims to be a Gnostic religion. There's more Gnosticism today than there was 2,000 years ago. Okay, but let's dive into this. So hopefully we've given a little bit of background to see that things are not quite as they seem. If people want more, they can go to my channel and actually go look at me discuss this in depth, right? Or listen to me discuss these details in great depth with all the resources. So let's have a look at the claims that the Jews own the world. And we see, let's compare, let's follow the money. Okay. Now, in the Western culture, we have a saying, the enemy of my enemy is my friend. However, in Islam, they have a different saying. I have heard this saying, it was told to me, but this is not something they'll easily tell you. They say in Islam, do not let your enemy know he's your enemy.
Hmm.
Keep that in mind and keep that. Now, for instance, these two guys, John Mearsheimer, Stephen Walt, wrote this book, The Israel Lobby, U.S. and Foreign Policy, right? So they spoke of the Israel Lobby. Now these guys, yeah, I would take whatever they say with a large bag of salt. Okay. So they mainstream the narrative that there's an all-powerful Israeli lobby that controls US Middle East policy and conspiratorially the US itself. So the book completely ignored the existence of rival Arab Islamic interests. So they portrayed the Arabs as impotent, weak, unable to affect their own fate or influence US actions. The poor Arabs have no power. The poor, poor, poor oppressed Arabs. So with the Hamas Charter, right, it promotes the Arab anti-Israel, anti-Jewish, Jews control the government talking point, which serves and benefits the Arab lobby. So the truth community, on the basis of all of this propaganda, all became apologists for Islam. Now, for instance, Israel's population of 8 million comprises something like 0.001% of the global population, but they cause 99% of the conflicts that have occurred since 9/11. Of course, we have to ignore the nearly 50,000 Muslim terror attacks since 9/11, right? The Israeli government, through AIPAC and other lobbies, have a stranglehold. Stranglehold means, actually, has very popular support amongst Americans and other Westerners. So they've got a stranglehold in America. No, we like them. Yeah. Very simply put, according to surveys, people don't like the Muslims because the Muslims have a culture that is foreign and considered toxic, right?
And also, what's funny is the level of like short-term memory and like, oh, you know, they're just poor Arabs, like these Muslim extremists, these terrorist attacks, the Allah Akbar chanting, yep, terrorist attacks. Like, ah, you know, we've become so numb to it that we don't even consider it and try to put it in the other person's shoe and how we would react.
Yeah, no, agreed. So let's have a quick look. Now, these statistics here are 2 years old. It's been a couple of years since I've done this. I've had to update this each time I do it. But you asked me last moment to do this, so I have not had a chance to update the figures. A couple of years ago, since 9/11, there have been something like nearly 50,000. I think it's now closer to 47,000, 48,000 recorded Islamic jihad terror attacks. In 2021, 53 countries had 2,258 attacks that murdered 11,187 people, injuring 9,581. In 2020, 54 countries had over 2,182 attacks, murdering 10,260, injuring nearly 8,000. In 2019, 45 countries, nearly 1,200 Islamic attacks, murdering 6,800 people. 2018 saw nearly 2,000 attacks in 55 countries, nearly 12,000 murdered. I think you get the point. So up to 2021, right, March 2021 approximately, 105,000 terrorist murders in 15,000 Islamic Jihad attacks since 2015 alone. Because as you know, Islam's the religion of peace, you bigot. All right. So...
Well, they're just fighting off, they're retaliating for the U.S.'s oppression because they did their bidding all across the world. So it's just
In Russia, look, those people were listening to music, and that's haram. You have to kill them.
You have to.
They were listening to Ariana Grande, and that's why we have to kill people at the concert, because you can't have that, right? So the Islamic Arab lobby operates unseen. It operates by stealth. Right? So they deny everything. They claim there is no Arab lobby. Now, but the Arab lobby is older than the Israeli lobby. The Arab National League of America was founded in the 1930s, before Israel even existed. In 51, King Saud of Saudi Arabia asked U.S. officials to finance a pro-Arab lobby to counter the pro-Israel lobby. And the CIA obliged him. Because it's not like you don't have Shriners in the White House, right? Who have nothing to do with Islam, of course, as we know, Islam has nothing to do with Islam, as we all know, right? So we'll people can watch this on my channel. Just search for lobby. So the Arab lobby is older than the Israeli lobby, right? The Arab lobby is a group of 21 Islamic states plus Fakistan. It is Saudi-led and dominated, representing the U.S. by oil interests, defense contractors, and corporations with commercial interests in Saudi Arabia, right? Pentagon. They sell weapons to supposedly protect U.S. interests, okay? And for the Pentagon also, to sell those weapons, they can lower unit costs and extend production life and, of course, make income on contracts. So let's have a look at the Palestinian question.
So essentially, the government and the CIA was like, yeah, let's do it as long as we can sell you more arms and make more money.
Yes, of course. Well, since we're here, we can have a look at... I'm sure I've got some notes... I'll bring those up. Let me do something here. Something we didn't cover before, but I want to. We've shown this, right? This I was at first under the impression this is a flag of the Hitler Youth section of Palestine. So this was found in Palestine. You can see here, Palestina. So this was found, right, during the war, I believe, and this was captured. So these Palestinians were literally Nazis. The Palestinians were literally Nazis. Let's
have a look. I thought this was like a rogue concept, or like you had to really do. You did do some deep diving, but this is a very. If you actually do your digging, like there's very like non-controversial historians that are like, yeah, like the SS and the Palestinians were clearly in talks. Like Hitler was going to supply them arms. Like it was like not even a secret that they were on the same side.
Yeah. So these are Nazi flags collected here in South Jerusalem. They were going to fly these after they killed the Jews. So the Palestinians were literally Nazis.
Yeah. And people are like, oh, you're committing a Holocaust. And it's just like the irony. And especially what, during the war, what type of material that, the IDF discovered in Gaza. It's just crazy.
Yeah. So, of course, recently someone told me, well, the Nazi Mufti, this is the Grand Mufti of Jerusalem, Haj Amin al-Husseini. He volunteered to join the German war effort. So he was made a general in the Nazi SS, not just regular army, Nazi SS. Yeah. They went on to create the largest Nazi SS unit was the Hanschar. Right, they have other names as well. However, they were the largest Nazi SS division with over 30,000 troops. These were Muslim Nazi SS troops. But it's just an accident. They didn't realize they were fighting for the Nazis, or they would have immediately just moved on to join the Buddhists or whatever. Now you can see here, these are Palestinians that are making their their Nazi salute, and this is the Mufti with doing his Nazi salute, saluting his troops with Hitler, and you'll see him with Himmler, Goering, and various others. So clearly, notice Arab youths found Nazi club in Haifa. That's from the newspapers. Let me actually just bring this up. Arab youths found Nazi club in Haifa. Nazis affiliate with Arabs.
And by the way, like, if you really think about it, a Grand Mufti isn't even like a prime minister or president. He's like apparently just like the religious leader of Jerusalem. That's what Grand Mufti essentially means, right? So it's like, imagine if that was a Christian leader of a country or a city, like, and then he's just like doing these military moves, or a Jewish religious leader of a territory doing military moves. Like, people would be like, what in the world? But for some reason,
imagine the stories that you hear about, oh, there was Hitler's Pope. Right, but here you've got this guy shaking hands with a whole array of Nazi leaders, raising an army. He raised apparently 600,000 Muslims to fight against the West, but it's okay because it's okay when Muslims do it. Notice suspect Nazis in Palestine uprising. There was Nazi handbills openly spread in Jerusalem. Understand, there was swastika on Arab oranges displeases Berlin Aryans. Even the Nazis got a little upset about that. Okay. So Israel has peace treaties with only two.
Like Hitler, I mean, he was just using them because at the end of the day, I mean, Arabs weren't Aryan either. So it's not like he's like, yeah, you guys are cool because you hate the Jews. It's like, no, we're going to get to you. But for now, we can use you.
Fair enough. So Israel has peace treaties only with two neighbors, right? Technically, it is at war with the rest of the Arab Islamic world. Iran is openly hostile, right? So Israel's enemies have numerous suppliers. Notice Canada and other countries now want to cut off or have cut off supplies of weapon systems to Israel. That's why Israel had to become independent. So Israel relies almost entirely on the United States. And you know that if Israel opened its borders and dropped its weapons, every Israeli would be murdered because it is a religious requirement by Muslims to murder all Jews to bring the end times, to bring the eschaton, to bring Muhammad back. So let's have a look at a few numbers here. Top 10 U.S. weapons clients. Saudi Arabia, number one. CBS News, which, as you know, is a far-right organization, right? Saudi Arabia is number one. UAE, number three. Iraq, number four. Turkey, number five. Right, Turkey is even a NATO member. And Israel, as you can see, is number one on the list, but the Jews have hidden it secretly. It's actually number one, but it's a secret. You can't see it because it's invisible. It's tell nobody, you see, because it's secret. Therefore, you must ignore. And Saudi Arabia is just a patsy. They don't even know. See, that's the nonsense you're going to hear from people. Saudi Arabia is the number one by far. It is double the nearest, okay, partner who buys weapons. So you can see here, Taiwan, United Kingdom, Japan. The USA's biggest export partners, Saudi Arabia, Australia, Israel. Way down here. Okay, let's continue. The Israeli lobby reflects the will of Americans. See, he says here, this guy, Senator Thomas McIntyre, that the Israeli lobby reflects the will of a strong majority of Americans, right? So, and he says here, what about the oil lobby? He says the influence of big oil is far more insidious and far more pervasive than the influence of the Jewish lobby. Now, as you know, Israel is the largest oil-producing nation on Earth, correct?
No, definitely not.
No, not at all, yeah. So for oil and influence seep across ideological as well as party lines without public approval or support. We need that oil, so yeah, we guess we'll overlook any concerns and issues. So he said the Jewish lobby is not in the same league as the general's own lobby, the Pentagon and the defense establishment. This is after Staff General George Brown attacked the Jewish lobby and Jewish ownership of banks and newspapers. All of this can be questioned. We're going to have a look at all of this just briefly then. They complain about AIPAC. AIPAC is domestic money raised by American Jews and Christians, including Christian refugees from Lebanon, who understand the Muslim threat and agenda, and they support Israel. Right? So the Arab lobby has worldwide reach. So you're looking at the United Nations. Between them and the Chinese, they own the United Nations. They're the largest voting bloc in the United Nations, the OIC, the Organization of Islamic Cooperation, 48, 49 countries, right?
I mean, that makes sense. I mean, it's obvious based off of the way the direction is going and the way the votes go.
Yeah. Now, the Bush family, George Bush, they earned at least what is known, $1.47 billion from Saudi Arabia. The Clinton family has strong ties to Muslims and to Islam. Grover Norquist, he was aiding and abetting the Muslim Brotherhood. John Brennan, apparently head of the CIA, Muslim. And Huma Abedin, right? So now, so for instance, Huma Abedin and the Muslim World League, we can have, actually, let's have a look at that. Muslim Brotherhood. So this is Huma Abedin. Okay, she's a Muslim member of the Muslim Brotherhood. Her father is deep into the Muslim Brotherhood. So is her mother.
Really?
They are propagandists for the Muslim Brotherhood.
Isn't Sorry? She the one that dated the guy that got caught with like Kitty?
Yes.
With a yes. Kitty?
Yes.
Whoa, yep. I didn't know that. That makes
She's
sense.
She's named Hillary Clinton's shadow. She was the vice chair of Hillary's 2016 presidential campaign. She was personal assistant to Clinton's first presidential run in 2008. She would answer Hillary's cell phone. She had full access to Hillary's cell phone. Abedin was the only official channel to Clinton, and she was elevated to the most senior member of Clinton's staff. Right? Now, for instance, right? Let me see. Abedin,
like sociopath vibes, like, and there was a, you got a, I don't know if you've seen it, the documentary about her and her former husband. Oh man, I forget. Mm-hmm. I think Weinstein or
Weiner.
Weiner, yeah. They had a documentary and I watched it. I think I paid for it because I was so curious. And it was so bizarre, but I was just looking at her and I'm like, any healthy woman would be like deranged leaving the guy, but she just kind of like ate it. And like, not in like a, I'm being strong for my man kind of way of like, what does he have on you? Or like, what is going on? What is your additional reason for being in this relationship? But it all is starting to make sense. Wow, I didn't know. I got to research her.
Yep. So hold on. Let's. I just been trying to find the name of her current husband.
Yeah, she okay. pulled up. I forget.
So she is currently. So hold on. Let's have a look at. Apparently, we still have to confirm if this is 100% true. But she is, by all accounts,
George Soros's son. I forgot. Yeah, that's. Yo, she knows what she is doing. Wow. Okay, this is trippy.
Yeah, so I mean, look, this is nothing to do with Islam. This is nothing to do with Islam. You bigot. See, so she lived in Saudi Arabia for 16 years. Now, what happened was they were refugees that traveled from Michigan to Jeddah. See, they fled from Michigan to Jeddah, which is 53 miles from Mecca, Saudi Arabia, with her parents. The late father, right, was affiliated with the Muslim Students Association, a Muslim Brotherhood front. Okay. Sayyid means a Muslim claiming descent from Muhammad, and Abedi is one who serves or worships Allah. Allah worshippers. See, that's what their name means. Sayyid. So Abedi, one who worships Allah. But you know, it's not what the name says. It's you must understand, if you interpret it correctly, it means good Christian, completely normal, not and so she goes to George Washington University, which receives massive amounts of Muslim funding. She married ex-Congressman Anthony Weiner. Okay. She was a special government. A lot of
funding. My cousin, he graduated from George Washington. No, American University. I'm lying. Yeah. But yeah, a lot of those schools, I'm like, yo, there's a lot of Muslims here.
There's a lot of Muslim money going there.
I don't know. That's crazy.
Now, notice the Pakistani Awan brothers, right? They got DWS. So... DWS is, what's her name? Debbie Wasserman Schultz, this turncoat Jew here. She hires the Pakistani Awan brothers as Capital Technical Staff. They both get top secret security clearances. They copied the congressman's data to Huma Abedin's server. They transferred the data to Pakistan, and then Pakistan donated millions to the Clinton charity. Nothing to see here. Please move along. See? So... Imran Awan and his family were banned from the house computer network. A server containing evidence has gone missing. And of course, but you know, you get the idea. I don't have to go too long into this. The Muslim World League, here's the Muslim World League. That's the charity organization or the Islamic literary organization or whatever that her father ran. It's on 46 Googe Street, Fitzrovia, London. Okay, mm-hmm. All fine and well. Notice the Institute of Muslim Minority Affairs, 46 Googe Street in London. Right. And it also happens to be so her father's institute happens to be at the same address as the Saudi Arabian Institute, which which promotes Saudi Arabian policy. Right. Wow. So there's some of the link there. I didn't prep for this, right, to understand. But so they have this Journal of Muslim Affairs. And then, of course, but there's more to it than I recall right now, as I said. And then, of course, this is Hillary Clinton with Huma Abedin's mother supporting her book. Right. So there's no support for Muslims whatsoever. But of course, her mother, you know, the book was about child marriage, stonings and whippings for adulterous women, and even female genital mutilation. Right. But that's okay. Hillary Clinton was there.
Feminism, though. Feminism.
And the Clinton Foundation got $25 million from Saudi Arabia, and Saudi Arabia funded 20% of Hillary's election campaign. Nothing to do with Islam. No one sold out. No one got bought. Nothing like that. Nothing to see here. Let's move along. Okay, so let's look at some of these Arab lobby things. So Americans are very highly pro-Israel. That is what is shown from studies that have been done. So the structure of the Arab lobby, it's mostly run by the Saudis. Okay, so you've got lots of groups. Now let's have a look here.
Now, one thing that's interesting, like as I'm thinking about this, is Saudi Arabia, I think, is like wants normalization with Israel for monetary reason, not for like philanthropic reasons, I'm sure. But back when they were kind of part of the Arab League conglomerate, I'm sure they were contributing to these lobbies that were very anti-Israel. So it may not reflect where Saudi Arabia
is. They're probably playing both sides, because the problem is with Iran. They're terrified of Iran.
Yeah, exactly.
So they need an ally against Iran. There's that. So it's mutual interest in that sense. So we've got this report that says in 2017, the Muslims, they contacted every single senator, everyone on the appropriations committees, the foreign affairs committees, the arms service committees, multiple times, right? Those who are making decisions about whether or not arms deals are going to go through with the government. Okay. On the other side is a massive public relations campaign, because they want the weapons and they also want to deny Israel the weapons. Now, notice these newspaper reports here. The Arab lobby in America and influence of the U.S. lost in the controversy over this mosque in New York is the fact that the Arab lobby is one of the strongest in America, even stronger than Israel's. All right. It's time to silence the Saudi lobbying machine in Washington. Right. And then, of course, we've got here more than $40 million from Saudi in 2017 and 2018. Saudi lobbyists have contacted Congress, the executive branch, media outlets, and think tanks more than 4,000 times. Right, Saudi Arabia has amassed one of the largest and most well-funded influence operations in the United States, pumping cash into think tanks, elite American universities. So Saudi-hired lobbyists give millions to influence U.S. Congress. Saudi prosecutors. So, of course, Adnan Khashoggi was killed and nothing happened because the Saudis have poured money into lobbying for decades. What makes a U.S.-Saudi relationship so special? Weapons, oil, and an army of lobbyists. Time magazine, hardcore far-right organization, as you know. Mm-hmm. U.S. lobbyists continue working with the Saudi Arabia after Khashoggi killing. The lucrative relationship is unlikely to die anytime soon. The royal touch, the Saudi lobby juggernaut. Okay, so the kingdom has doled out cash, but let's just jump through. Saudi Arabian lobbyists have many friends in D.C. Oh, very, very close to this guy, Barack Obama. How much Saudi Arabia spends to influence public opinion in the U.S., right? Khashoggi Akram has spurred Saudis to step up their really powerful lobbying. When Trump became president, the Saudis tripled their budget on lobbying, right? Because Trump was not obviously their friend. Saudi lobbying in the U.S. has tripled since Trump took office, right? Saudis used incentives and threats to shut down U.S. investigation in Yemen. 750,000 Muslims killed by Muslims. That would be, what, a quarter of the Palestinians? And no one cares. Nobody cares. Because no Jews, no news. Muslims murdering Muslims on a genocidal scale? That's okay. Saudi lobbying jeopardizes UN war crimes probe. Oh, okay. Now you can see all of this stuff. Let's continue. Saudi Arabia restored the U.S. influence machine after the Khashoggi murder. Saudi lobby moves from K Street to Main Street. And now let's have a look at this. All of the answers, everything needed to dismantle Osama bin Laden's organization, can be found in Saudi Arabia. John O'Neill, FBI counterterror expert, was sent to the office on 9/11 and died there. People have asked, was he sent to die? Okay. 2 days after 9/11, U.S. air traffic was tightly restricted. 140 Saudis and family of Osama bin Laden were permitted to leave and escape questioning by U.S. intelligence, because Arab Muslims have no influence. Poor These are people who live in caves, don't have modern toilets. They're poor. They have no influence whatsoever. So yeah, you know.
The Jews. With the Saudis. It's always the Jews.
So Prince Bandar, nicknamed Bandar Bush because he was so tight in with the George Bush family, ambassador to the U.S. from 83 to 2005 and former head of Saudi intelligence, donated $1 million to the Bush Presidential Library. His father was Saudi defense minister. He was close friends with the elder Bush for more than 20 years. And of course, Bandar Bush wrote to Bush, "I feel like one of your family. You are like one of our own." And of course, when Dick Cheney was CEO, they got lots of lucrative contracts. Did the Saudis buy a president? How much money has flowed from the House of Saud to the Bush family? At least $1.5 billion, at least. If the Saudis had been happy with the presidency of George H.W. Bush, they were even happier under George Bush, the conservative Republican. So Nelson Mandela is quoted as describing the prince as one of the great peacemakers of our time, an outstanding man, wonderful, wonderful dude. He's the nephew of King Fahd. He has landing rights for his private Airbus jet at the RAF Bryce Norton base, the largest station of the Royal Air Force. Are you allowed to park your car at Buckingham Palace like this guy can?
Nah.
He's got special landing rights for his jet at a military airbase in the UK.
Wow.
Because he has these Arabs have no influence whatsoever. They've got no money. I mean, you know, they can't even afford jets. Crazy. Crazy stuff. Here he is with, okay, it was a terrific fight, but you managed. You can see here, what's this fool's name? Tony Blair. George H.W. Bush. That's Bandar Bush here. Let's have a look. Old friends going back. Nelson Mandela. Because the Arabs have no influence. They've got no friends. They've got no political clout. They've got no money. They, you know, just poor, poor people. He has personal relationships with Russia, China, Syria, Great Britain. Okay. He was detained as part of, he was detained as part of Saudi Arabia's so-called corruption purge under Mohammed bin Salman because he was very much involved in corruption and he bought an entire village in the richest part or one of the very richest parts of the UK. He bought an entire village. Well, he also got kickbacks in a criminal investigation, was discovered in what's called the Al Yamama arms deal, which netted British manufacturer BAE $56.5 billion.
Whoa.
Right? So nothing to see here. The case was dropped after an intervention by Tony Blair. I guess Tony Blair, you know, must have been good friends with him, made the investigation go away. Survivors of the 9/11 attacks wrote to British Prime Minister Theresa May, urging her to make publish a British government report into the extent of Saudi Arabia's funding of Islamist extremism in the UK. And of course, that didn't happen. The government refuses to release the report into Saudi Arabia's funding of Islamist extremism in the UK. So as you can see, it's Jews doing it, and the Saudi Arabians are innocent. These Muslims are innocent. There's no information whatsoever to accuse them. Yeah,
it's so comprehensive, right? The influence, the amount of attacks, that it's not good for a talking point. The kind of the issue is that it's so all-encompassing. Because it's harder to be like, you know, argue and debate and be like, well, it's because of this, but it's not. It's because of this, that, this, and all of these other things.
Yeah. So this is him with George Bush, you know, giving each other a kiss and all that and holding hands. I mean, that's what friends do. You know, that's what friends do. We hold hands.
That's cute.
Right? And I just had to, that's a real man there. There's a real man. That's
the way he shoots a basketball is just zesty.
That's and a little
all your life and like
a little G-H-E-Y for sure. Okay, moving on. So that's the okay. Never before in history had a presidential candidate, much less a presidential candidate and his father, a former president, been so closely tied financially and personally to the ruling family of another foreign power. Never before had a president's personal fortunes and public policies been so deeply entwined with another nation. That's the Bushes and the Sauds. Now you can see these Sauds, yeah. So foreign interest spending is Israel number one. Foreign interests have spent over $530 million influencing U.S. foreign policy and public opinion since 2017. The number one spender since 2017 at $70.5 million is South Korea. Number two is Israel, Japan. So the overblown claims against Israeli Jewish lobbying are just that, Okay, we'll have a look at some of the spending. 3 out of every $10 spent on foreign lobbying in the US originates from East Asian countries, specifically South Korea, Japan, China, Hong Kong, and Taiwan. Right? So the South Korean government has spent $54 million, right? Why? Because they don't want to be invaded by China. Top 10 countries by spending since 2017. United Arab Emirates is third. Israel is fourth here. Cayman Islands and Saudi Arabia. So it has been realized that money in the Cayman Islands, as well as other places, are probably laundered for the Saudis. So
wait, what is this in the graph of?
Top 10 countries by spending. I believe it's on lobbying in the US.
Got it.
Okay. Now the thing is, this changes year by year. Some years, Israel's lobbying money is like close to zero. It drops tremendously. So now, top 10 foreign principals by spending, 2017-2018, government of South Korea, Japan External Trade Organization, Tourism Ireland. Irish tourism spends a pile of money. Now, the government of the Cayman Islands and the government of the Marshall Islands. Now, the Cayman Islands and the Marshall Islands put together have about 8 people and 3 goats. Okay, so all in all, if you check the piggy banks there, you're going to find $12 between all of them. Okay, except they have billions and billions in bank accounts, untraceable, which of course belong to, let's just say, certain interests, but also this money is used for lobbying, this money is used for investment, which is used for leverage against the US government. And of course, we realize it's far more than what Saudi is actually spending. This is where Saudi money, Chinese money, and other money goes. Government of Qatar, Deutsche Bank Telekom. Israel's not even in the top 10, right? Remember I asked you how much of this is Saudi money, okay? Now, combined, start adding up all the Muslim money. Start adding up all the Muslim money, and that line starts to stretch out to here.
Yeah.
See?
Yeah.
Now, the top lobby groups, John Podesta. So John Podesta, okay, is a lobbyist. He worked very closely with Hillary Clinton. And yeah, so these guys, this organization took in $5.5 million from the UAE, who are Muslims, last I checked, right? So yeah, so there's lots of funny stuff. The Podesta group, right? So the firm dissolved, John Podesta's firm dissolved following scrutiny over foreign lobbying activities. Because they're doing funny things for Muslim money, right? Let's have a look here. Lobbying firms, top 10, Podesta Group, Akin Gump. So between these two, who are helping the Muslims out so much, that's a lot of money, far more than the rest combined at this point. Let's continue, right? So this is what Saudi Arabia's influence network in Washington looks like. The Podesta Group is directly tied to the Saudi Royal Court. As you know, the Saudi Royal Court are all Jews, at least so I'm told quite often on the internet. You know, they're all Jews and yeah, whatever.
Well, everything's so all Jews. You know what I like to say when people say like everything's all Jews? I like to say, well, then everything good is all Jews then too, right?
Yeah, no, but I had tooth cavity and that was caused by a Jew that was digging in my tooth. True story.
Yeah, but a Jew dentist pulled it out because everything's Jewish.
You're right. So now, Saudi Arabia continues hiring spree on American lobbyists, public relations experts. So understand, these people are all over the place, right? These people are, actually, hold on. There's a bit more John Podesta stuff. So let me bring up, who's Tony Podesta, okay? So these people are dirty, right? These people are dirty. Tony Podesta personally managed the Saudi lobbying account. They made a ton of money. Chief of staff, John Podesta. So he's in the White House and he's tied up. He's up to the hilt involved with Muslim money. Okay. And they founded the influential DC think tank Center for American Progress, which pushes Saudi Arabian interests. But that's nothing to do with Islam, of course. He was counselor to President Obama. So clearly, these Muslims have no influence whatsoever in Washington. Okay. We've already discussed some of this. Saudi Arabia has funded 20% of Hillary Clinton's campaign. Let's have a look at some more money. Okay. Mr. Pilger asked if Mr. Assange believed that this notorious jihadist group, now this is Julian Assange, called ISIL or ISIS, is created largely with money from people who are giving money to the Clinton Foundation. Julian Assange said, yes, ISIS is created with money from people who are giving money to the Clinton Foundation. And this is one of the documents. While this military paramilitary operation is moving forward, we need to use our diplomatic and more traditional intelligence assets to bring pressure on the governments of Qatar and Saudi Arabia, which are providing clandestine financial and logistic support to ISIS and other Sunni groups in the region. This is, I believe, from, this is one of the documents linked to the to Hillary Clinton released by WikiLeaks and Julian Assange. These two are connected. Let's continue. Hillary Clinton email reveals she knew of Saudi and Qatar involvement funding for ISIS. Qataris and Saudis will be put in a position of balancing policy between ongoing competition to dominate the Sunni world. So the Qataris have apparently allied with Iran because they're competing for influence with the Saudis. They want to be the big guys. Blood money. How Qatar bought off the entire DC establishment. Why aren't we talking about this? That Qatar seems to have bought and sold the DC establishment. Isn't that news? So you've got the Muslim Brotherhood.
That's Islamophobic. Okay.
Yeah, yeah. So you see, that's why there was no reaction to Adnan Khashoggi being killed. So this is just to show people there's a whole sampling of information. There's plenty of this stuff. I go through this slower in much more detail in my talks. But understand, so instead of sanctioning the Saudis, Clinton authorized enormous quantities of weapons to be sold to the Saudis because money must not get in the way of principles. Okay? And of course, these weapons manufacturers all donated tons of money to Hillary Clinton's campaign, which would explain why. And why did the Saudi regime...
I'm so glad we're about to invade Saudi Arabia to put in a democracy.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. That's you're right. You're right. It's way overdue. I'm not sure why it hasn't happened yet. Yeah, there you go. See, so why do all these Gulf tyrannies? She was happy to take money from these Muslim places and then send them weapons and help and support. So DOJ fails to pursue allegations of Saudi lobbying misconduct. U.S. military veterans say that they were tricked into unknowingly lobbying on behalf of Saudi Arabia. But that's okay. FBI told former agent not to help 9/11 victims build a case against Saudi Arabia. Why? Because it has to be stated that only the Jews did it. Saudi Arabia, Pakistan, Iran had nothing to do with 9/11. That evidence must stay well hidden. Because warm relations with the kingdom comes first. FBI priority protecting U.S.-Saudi relationship. So the former Senate intelligence chair, Bob Graham, calls FBI's actions a fundamental assault on the principles of democracy. Saudi Arabia had nothing to do.
You know what I find funny is, like, if anyone doesn't believe this or thinks this is a stretch, for all intensive purposes, there's nothing different about Saudi Arabia, Russia, and China. But for some reason, we're supposed to hate two of those three countries more than Saudi Arabia. Like, yeah. For what actual reason is there? Like, if anyone's curious, like, think about it. Why?
Like, who's giving who a lot of money here, man?
Yeah, that's it.
You know? So notice Mike Cernovich, all these Never Trump people on Qatar's payroll, state funding from Qatar. There's an information campaign directed at shaping American public opinion. Okay, these are all on the Qatari payroll, which is a terrorist nation. Okay. And of course, you've got the UAE involved in there as well. So in 2013, the Israeli government gave $1,250 as spend on US lobbying in 2013. The UAE spent $14,200,000. In that year, they spent 11,360 times more than Israel.
Yeah, but you don't get it. It's because they already have power over them because they have them, you know, in their back pocket. So they don't need to spend the money because they already have control. Like, you can't win either way. That's what I love about stuff like this.
Yeah, no, you can't. You can't win no matter what, right? Top 10 foreign governments paying for U.S. influence. Look here. Saudi Arabia, UAE. Okay? Then you've got... Next, you've got Bosnia, Georgia, and Azerbaijan and Morocco. Then you've got South Korea that is very deeply concerned about an invasion by North Korea and so on. Trinidad. And then, of course, you've got Mexico. But notice how many Muslim countries are spending money influencing U.S. foreign policy. They work in concert. They work together. So you go, well, Saudi Arabia only spent $20. But if you take 48 Muslim countries and you add them together, it's a little bit more than everyone else.
So yeah.
When you start looking at it that way. Hillary Clinton, of course, plays both sides. She plays Moscow. There's the whole scandal with Moscow, but we'll skip over that. That's not important. Okay. Mexican drug kingpin El Chapo donated $15 million to the Clinton Foundation as well. She was willing to take money from anybody.
That's just hilarious. Like a drug kingpin just being like, you know what, let me be a respectable lobbyist.
Yeah, because Clinton Foundation's ties to finances of terrorism. Foreign governments that made donations to the Clinton Foundation And then, of course, arms exports to Saudi Arabia totaling $8 billion were approved up from 4.1. That money must have bought something. Okay, and then, of course, $56 million Upper East Side mansion where Jeffrey Epstein, allegedly abused girls. It featured photos of Bill Clinton, Woody Allen, and the Crown Prince of Saudi Arabia. Why aren't we talking about that?
Oh yeah, they don't bring it up in the documentary either. I didn't hear anything about that.
Because that would be Islamophobic, right?
Yep.
So yeah. They're both giving financial and logistical support to the Islamic State, Saudi Arabia, and Qatar. It's known that these guys are funding IS, but they couldn't care because they're making too much money. So our supposed Middle East allies are funding our terrorist foes. Qatar has given $5 million to the Clinton Foundation, and Saudi Arabia has donated more than $25 million with a major impact on U.S. policy when Clinton. And she writes here in this email with Hillary Rodham Clinton using an unofficial email, which is illegal. With Saudi Arabia, we may have different standards, she says.
Wow. See,
because we need to have different standards with Saudi Arabia because money over principle, right?
Okay, she's keeping it real.
We, Department of State and the United States government, may have different standards we apply with Saudi Arabia. See?
It's true.
Hillary Rodham Clinton. No doubt about that, she says. No doubt about that. We have different standards because they pay us a lot of money. So, Farah funding top 10 countries, okay? So here you've got Israel, $99 million for this year, okay? 17 to 19. Saudi Arabia, Farah? UAE. Foreign Agents Registration Act. People who are doing lobbying on behalf of a foreign agent. For instance, okay. like Hunter Biden was doing Farah work, acting as a foreign agent on behalf of foreign governments and foreign interests, and he never registered, which of course is a crime, but that's okay because he's a drug addict and the president's son, so it's okay when the president's son does it. Unless your name is Trump.
When you do corruption, you have to ask for permission, essentially.
Yeah. So notice here, Saudi Arabia, the Marshall Islands. Now, how much of this Marshall Islands money comes from Saudi Arabia? That's a question that really must be asked. Ireland, $52 million. What the heck is Ireland getting? Okay,
man, Ireland,
Bermuda. And don't forget your Bermuda. How much of this? Bermuda doesn't, seriously, this is all foreign money that is simply channeled through these countries, Marshall Islands, Bermuda, and other islands like that.
Yeah, and I was going to say, like, I feel like Ireland has a weird, like a very interesting relationship with the Arab countries, just seeing a response to the war in Israel. Like, a lot of people showed their hand and showed, like, because the logic doesn't make sense, right? Like, why are these certain countries overly emotional about this war when they have, one, no tie to it, no actual reason to be?
Because they've been captured economically and politically by Muslims, by funding. We'll have a look at that in a moment, how they did it. They did it through the schools and universities. They pumped billions of dollars into universities, and of course they influenced. They were able to propagandize successfully in the universities. They were able to inculcate pro-Islamic bias at universities. Notice Saudi Arabia, government of Bermuda, foreign principal total spending, nearly $80 billion. Is that $80 billion or $80 million, whatever, by the government of Bermuda? Because I guess Bermuda has just sold a lot of crayfish that year, you know? And they could afford to lobby the U.S. government for, larger imports of jelly beans or whatever it is that Bermuda...
They lobbied their whole GDP. That's impressive.
Do you understand? Someone is funding that money. You know, that's money that's been laundered, right? Then Israel is down here. But if you start adding up again all the Muslims, when you start adding... Now, this is again, Farah funding, Israel 2017 to 2019. These are different. This is 2018 here. $23,508,069, right? Total government spending, 2018. This is Israel, government and non-government spending. Now you look at the UAE, I believe this is. Saudi Arabia, $34 million. So that is significantly more money, right? So even when they spend more money, it's okay. So now this is a talk that's between a guy that was speaking about these crimes that they found. Okay, they found the Foreign Agents Registration Act is not well enforced by the Department of Justice because compliance is voluntary and the law is not clarified very well. And they say here, okay, think tanks who specialize in Middle Eastern policy receive millions of dollars from Saudi, Qatar, and the UAE, and So in other words, this money goes undisclosed and the influence goes undisclosed. So this is a long-standing practice? Yes. See? So Saudi lobby juggernaut, they are heavily involved in influence operations. So they will spend around $100 million over the next decade to improve public perception of Palestine, you see? And they launched the equivalent of a full court press, an aggressive campaign to woo the president. So they tripled their investment to buy influence, okay? And also, this money does not include money given to elite universities or think tanks, right? So I've already covered this, okay? But let me just... So Saudi Arabia has spent millions trying to keep 9/11 families and survivors from presenting evidence against the kingdom. Why would they want to suppress that evidence, right? And they even managed to undermine successfully a new law that cleared the way for 9/11 families and survivors to sue. So they stopped a law that would allow 9/11 families to sue Saudi Arabia. Why would these families want to sue Saudi Arabia? Okay. So there was a campaign to keep evidence of its links to 9/11 out of court because you can only blame Jews and white people, as you know, right? So anyway, so you can see Glenn Greenwald there talking about Saudi Arabia. Right, sorry, Iraq in this case. So Penske Media silent on $200 million Saudi investment after Jamal Khashoggi's disappearance. So because the Jews own the media, but we mustn't talk about the Arabs buying up all the media.
Right? Who is this guy?
Penske Media, this is the head of Saudi Arabia.
That's right. But who's the other guy?
I can't remember. It's been a while since I've done this. Penske Media Corp declined to comment on Monday. Okay.
Oh, I thought they said that guy disappeared or something. Okay.
Yes, no. Adnan Khashoggi, Jamal Khashoggi, sorry, disappeared. He was tortured and murdered, dismembered, because he was a Muslim Brotherhood asset. So, billionaire Saudi prince and Fox News co-owner arrested in Saudi Arabia corruption crackdown. Okay. So, he's a member of the country's royal family and an investor in Fox News and Apple and other media companies. He has invested in U.S. corporate entities like Citigroup, 21st Century Fox, and Twitter, among others. This Saudi prince now owns more of Twitter than Jack Dorsey. And of course, having, you know, great ownership, you know, being a major investor gives you no interest, rights, or voting influence whatsoever on social media companies. Not at all, as you know. Arrest of billionaire Saudi prince shines light in U.S. holdings, Citigroup, Twitter, and Apple. So clearly just a nobody.
These groups own a lot of businesses that people don't think about, that people don't talk about. It's crazy.
SoftBank's $93 billion Vision Fund is largely funded by Saudi Arabia because it's not like Saudi Arabia is influencing tech startups whatsoever.
Nope.
Right? It's not like they are influencing companies and businesses. Saudi Arabia money flows into Silicon Valley. The kingdom is now the largest single investor for U.S. startups, an unsettling fact for Silicon Valley. It's all public news.
Yeah.
Right? So the UAE-based Mubadala Investment Company, Saudi Arabia's PID public fund, these guys are invested in Apple, Qualcomm, Foxconn, and Foxconn on Sharp. They want to reach $100 billion. And the Saudis committed $45 billion to influence Western media, Silicon Valley. Okay? Why is there so much Saudi money in American universities? So this is like the end bit here with the universities. We'll have a look at some of the money they spent. Wahhabi indoctrination in U.S. education.
The New York Times. Wow. I'm surprised.
Yeah, which is a far-right organization. As you know, they're a heavily far-right organization.
Conspiracy theory.
Yeah. So let's have a look here. So we follow the money. University Dawa, number one. So you can go to the College Foreign Gift Reporting website, which is this one here. Okay. And you will get, you can download the document, and you can go and get the details on the funding that these companies get. So let me see if I have the document. Give me a second. Let me see if I have a current copy of this document. Give me a second. Let me just go find it.
But that is crazy. Like, I wouldn't expect the New York Times to mention anything about it. And obviously they're not going to say anything now, because that's, you're picking sides. You're pro-Israel. You're pro blah, blah, blah. You're Islamophobic.
Yep. Let me see if I have this. Give me a second. Okay, I no longer have a current copy of this. No, okay, so sadly, I no longer have a current copy of this, but you can download the latest document very, very easily. Okay, so now, these numbers are old, Okay, these need to be updated. They're a couple of years old now. I updated the numbers a couple of years ago, but I also on my Twitter and on my YouTube, I updated these numbers like 2 or 3 months ago. I put out the fresh figures for this. So notice China
and
has invested.
What DAWA is? Just a brief explanation of what DAWA is.
DAWA is like DAWA is propaganda. It's Islamic political propaganda. It's how Muslims proselytize. But DAWA technically is propaganda. Correctly, it means propaganda. So China has invested. This is the known figure. Now, there are ways to break it. Now, only certain types of transactions are monitored and recorded. So there are plenty that can be not recorded. Understand? So this is only what we know about. China has invested in the last few years over $680 million into U.S. universities, probably for no reason whatsoever.
It makes sense, like, why people are so sympathizing to communism.
Yeah, now notice Afghanistan, Bahrain, Bangladesh, and the Cayman Islands comes up again. Look how much money they're putting in. Egypt, Ethiopia, Indonesia, Iran, Iraq. All of these Muslim countries are putting in a lot of money into the universities. What are they getting out of it? Kazakhstan puts in $62 million. Kuwait puts in nearly $66 million. Qatar, $1.25 billion.
Whoa.
Saudi Arabia, $650 million. Israel's not even on this list. Actually, no. Israel, $53 million. Sorry. Israel here, I put them first. Yeah, I just dropped them up top here.
That's peanuts.
$53 million. Compared to $680 million, $62 million, $65 million. Kazakhstan and Kuwait spend more money. Lebanon, $5 million. Yeah, I start adding these up. And Qatar and Saudi, this is over $2 billion. Now, including communist China, you're looking at $3.2 billion by foreign governments. Muslim governments, including China, okay? In total, you're looking at $3.75 billion. So in other words, there are 1,848 Islamic donations versus 275 from Israel. The Muslims are spending 69.7 times more than Israel spend in universities. And of course, these guys are creating dawah, they're creating textbooks, they're creating pro-Hamas, pro-Muslim, pro-Quran, you know, Muslim dawah. Whereas Israel is spending the bulk of its money in biotechnology and farming. Israel is spending money on farming technology in the university.
My dad came here and did. He was like a laboratory manager at a company here, or he was a laboratory manager, but he also was doing a lot of agriculture stuff in Israel. And he's like drip irrigation. He's like a massive nerd when it comes to plant stuff. But you know what's funny? I was taking a history class, and now that I'm learning on my own more history, because obviously university history is really biased, They completely do not mention the Islamic conquest when they cover world history or ancient history. Like, they call it separate things. Like, one is the Moors, one is like, there's like, they make it very individualistic and they remove the religious aspect to it until the Crusades, and then they make sure they mention the Crusades and the religion aspect when it comes to that, but there's no Islamic mentioning when it comes to history when I was taking it. I don't know if this was like a specific situation. I don't think it reflects all history classes, but it's just a very, very interesting thing to remove from the history lesson when you mention religion and other aspects.
Yeah, these people are putting money into... these people are putting money into kindergarten. Saudis are dropping money. If people go to search for Lobby on my channel and watch the series, they're putting money into kindergarten. They're writing books for kindergartners to tell them how Islam is a religion of peace, warm peace. Right? They're writing books for school, university. They are influencing education departments. They're influencing how Islam is written about. See,
yeah,
and do you want to lose your $98 million of funding by writing something the Muslims wouldn't like in your textbook? We can't have that, Mr. Teacher, Mr. Professor, Mr. Adjunct Professor. You're going to have to say nice things, or we're going to lose our lovely houses, our paid, our paid conferences every year to Paris. You know, and to these wonderful resorts where we have a 5-day conference on the beach. You know, you don't want that to happen. Notice the Muslims here, Atlas of the Islamic Conquests, and they'll tell you about 300 of their, I think, or whatever it is, and they just go through a whole bunch of their wars and things you can see here, because Islam never did anything violent. The first phase of the conquests, the first military expeditions to Iraq, because they never conquered anyone with the sword. No. That would religion be false. You see? You see? Abu Bakr's plan for the conquest of Iraq, because the Iraqis just welcomed them in with flowers. You know, they didn't have to do any warfare. You see, because Muslims would never do something like that. The conquest of Anbar. Okay, you see, so they've got all of this stuff. Khalid ibn Walid's military operations in Iraq. The conquest. Yeah, so they've got this. They've got, and they're very proud about the. Look how long this list is. Okay, and then they talk about this stuff, and then when we go through, you'll come across. You know, all of their maps of conquest, because Islamic conquest and their nature and their development, because Muslims never conquested. Never. Wow. Just keep that in mind. See? So that's
from my... Islamophobic. My Muslim neighbor's nice to me.
Exactly.
I have a Muslim friend, he's nice.
So just the top five Muslim funders spend 42 times more than Israel does on lobbying in the universities alone.
Wow.
See, and these are old numbers, right? Let's have a look. Follow the money, University of Dawah, Georgetown University, funding from Muslim nations. Now, the U.S. taxpayer, okay, which gives funding to Mideast departments, is under 500,000. Funding from Muslim nations, $378 million. Yeah. What's the difference? That's nearly 800 times more, I would think.
Yeah, you have leverage at that point. Like, you have major leverage.
Yeah, George Washington University, $258,000 U.S. taxpayer funding, over $100 million from Muslim nations. Israel spent $507,000. So this $507,000 obviously gets them a lot more clout than $101 million. Okay, wow. You can see how much money Muslims are putting into universities. New York University, $81 million. These are old numbers. These are 2 years old numbers.
George Washington is rolling around in his grave right now, seeing these numbers.
Yeah. Let's have a look at Islamic lobby. Okay. University Dawah spent Kuwait, Kazakhstan, Iraq, UAE, Saudi Arabia. This is Israel. Iraq spends more, almost as much as Israel, sorry. But when you start adding these up, these numbers are running way off to the right-hand side of the page. Do you understand? These are the numbers. These people are spending a lot of money to buy America, to buy Europe, to buy the universities. And this guy, okay, so yeah, this is a very interesting read. So look, if you have a chance, go read this. This is not a good guy. I mean, in this, he's very sympathetic in this article. Great, but this man is still not a good guy. But this, where he talks about the corruption of U.S. universities and the violence and threats that happens in U.S. universities when Muslim teachers step out of line.
Okay. What do you mean?
They will kidnap you. They will rip off your fingernails. You will find yourself in a basement. They'll invite you to a conference in Riyadh, and you'll end up in a basement having your fingernails torn off. That kind of
thing. Whoa.
Yeah, it happened to him. It happens. So here we go. Islamic countries combined Dawah spend $2.5 billion, and this is Israel. The Muslims are spending at least 47 times more that we know of.
Right.
So understand, the Muslims cannot change your mind, so they went after your children.
Sheesh, makes sense. I mean, they're pretty successful. I mean, they're clearly been successful with it.
Look what's happening today with the whole pro-Palestine rallies. People are clueless. They're supporting terrorists. And also you can see from this that it used to be, that's just a small minority. Those Muslim terrorists, they hijacked Islam. Well, it looks like they've hijacked now 100% of Islam, because 100% of Muslims are now pro-terrorism, pro-Hamas, pro-Muslim Brotherhood.
It's crazy.
So we can see now that was a lie all the time. So Sharia finance. So final bit here. Sharia finance, $3 trillion. Hot trend in 2017. So that's almost 7 years ago. Rise of Islamic banks on Main Street, USA. A financial revolution is going on. It's the rise of Islamic financial institutions. Islamic banks that fund terrorism, which we know fund terrorism. I mean, Hillary Clinton admitted it. State Department admitted it. And these lobbying groups with close ties to Hillary Clinton, okay, and of course, Bank Mehli, an Iranian bank, And since 2000, Islamic banks are a force to be reckoned with. Islamic bank capital grew from $200 billion to nearly $3 trillion in 2016. What is the GDP of Israel? Let's have a look. Let's look it up. Okay, so let me see. Israel, as you know, has the richest Jews in the world, right? Because Israel is floating on money. They've got all the money in the world. They're worth 90 million, jillion, gadillion, trillion, billion, billion, jilly, billions. Here, this is the GDP of Israel. $488.5 billion US dollars. Islamic banks had $3 trillion in the US in 2016. More than six times more than Israel is worth today as GDP. Okay. And they expect it will be 4 trillion and higher in the 2020s. Follow the money. Now, look, I mean, you're not going to convince the liars, the haters, the idiots, the absolute abject idiots with facts and figures. But hopefully, those of you who have minds to think, who can understand facts and figures, understand that we're being sold a lie here. These people are pouring incredible amounts of money into the financial system, which makes its way into the legal system, the political system, the schools, from kindergarten, primary school, high school, to universities, to buy everyone's minds, to buy influence.
Yeah, and so, yeah. I think the more I research it too, the more I realize it's not always malicious. It's usually just generational, right? Like, you have a lot of people like in the South of America, like, that are generationally racist. Like, they're not really, they never really had personally a bad experience with a black person, but it's just part, it's such a deep part of the culture that to hate Jews as a Muslim. That
to annoy people with facts, Martin Luther has a great deal to do with that. Martin Luther is one of the major factors for the absolute hatred of Jews in the West.
He was anti-Semitic for sure.
Oh no, he was fundamental. Look, I know people are going to go, well, you know, he did say a few things he shouldn't have, and people have no idea. I'm doing a talk right now. Actually, let me just go to my channel quickly and bring something up.
Go for it.
Let me just do this for a moment. And because it is significantly worse than people realize, it has been hidden. It has been lied about. It has been covered up. This man's influence. Now, I've just done here a couple of talks. So let me go through this. I've just finished Lucifer, the story of the first Protestant, where we discuss the Protestant jihad and, of course, Protestantism as the religion of peace, which historical details that people will not like to hear. But then, of course, I spoke about Martin Luther's very potty mouth. Okay. This one, of course, is deliberately inflammatory, but Martin Luther was the most disgusting, vile speaker you've ever heard.
You're Catholic, right? Or you?
No, I'm not Catholic. I know everyone seems to think I'm Catholic. You do realize in America, if you become Catholic, you automatically go on an FBI terror watch list. And I don't want that to happen to me today.
I heard about that.
Because I wonder if the Muslims are paying for that to happen. And but no, I was raised High Church Anglican. And at the moment, yes, I...
So that's not under the umbrella of Protestantism? Mm-hmm. That's not under that umbrella?
Yes, it is.
Okay.
Yeah, very much. And it's a breakaway from the Catholic Church as well. Although, having started to read the early church fathers and having studied history, you realize that Martin Luther had a lot in common with these two guys here. You see the two people here on the... See the two guys here on the page? Okay?
Yeah.
Martin Luther had a great deal in common with Muhammad and with Hitler, far more than people realize. And yeah, so I'm covering this, and of course I'll be talking about Martin Luther. So this is something I'm covering right now on my channel. People should look at that.
Yeah, subscribe to his channel, guys. Go check it out.
There are more than 300 banks and 250 mutual funds across the world that comply with Sharia principles. You see, they brought under Sharia compliance with money. So the largest banks, now notice, this is $3 trillion, $4 trillion, they say, in the U.S. in the 2020s. The largest bank in the U.S. is worth only $2.5 trillion. So these guys are ganging together, you see, thousands of banks. You can't track them all very easily. So they are using financial pressure. See, so these banks, they are slowly getting into the Islamic gig as well, the whole Sharia finance thing. Now, also, the royal family's net worth is considered to be $88 billion, right? That's one claim. Now, I've seen others where they place the royal family, UK royal family, but that's in total assets. In terms of liquid cash, actually available cash, this is properties. They cannot ever sell these properties. So this is an inflated number because those are national treasures they can't sell. Like they can't sell Buckingham Palace to you or me, right? That's not allowed. Whereas the actual saleable assets they have is worth about $16 billion. Now, if you look at the Prince of Saudi Arabia, those guys are worth significantly more than that. And even Elon Musk has said that Putin is worth significantly more than he is. Putin owns the country. The Prince of Saudi Arabia owns the country. All of those assets belong to him. You could look at the UAE. They've got over $1 trillion, a couple of $1 trillion nearly in their government fund. That all belongs to the Crown Prince or to the Sheikh. Understand, these people are vastly richer than some of these other people. See, so everyone claims that these people are so rich, and no. The Muslims are far, far wealthier. Do some research. See all of the super yachts in the world. How many belong to Muslims? All of the major, the biggest, most super yachts in the world. How many are Muslims? Ask yourself how many Jamaicans owns those things, how many Israelis. So, this is John MacArthur. He's a leftist. I can't shake the idea that the Israel lobby, no matter how powerful, isn't all it is cracked up to be, particularly where it concerns the Bush administration, past and present. When I think of pernicious foreign lobbies with disproportionate sway over American politics, I can't see past Saudi Arabia, led by its royal house, and the long and corrupt history of American Saudi Arabias and relations. See? So, and of course, George Bush is the man who gave us the term Islam is a religion of peace. Now notice, I'm just going to show this. I'm not going to play the audio. This is, I believe, Ahmad Awad. I can't remember the name. Look, since I wasn't prepped for this, I'm not going to remember every factual detail. This is Ahmad Awad or something like that. This guy is the head of CARE, which is the Muslim Brotherhood organization. Hamas is also a Muslim Brotherhood organization. He's standing right behind George Bush when George Bush gives the world one of the worst things that was ever said. Islam is a religion of peace. I wonder who told him to say that. I'll leave that there. I think I've done enough. This should cover it. But hopefully I've given you an insight into the fact that the story we've spun is simply designed to take the focus off Islam and Muslims and what they are doing.
Okay, cool. Yeah, I think that's a good general history of the lobby. I think the people that are genuine are pretty clear about what their perspective should be by now, but you know, you can think what you want. You know, that's the beautiful thing about having freedom of thought. But I guess like your perspective, or from what your research has been, like what's your perspective on, I guess the war or the Israel-Palestine conflict? I have my perspective because I'm so close to it. Obviously I live in Israel now. I was here before, during, and after the war. But what are your thoughts about it?
So for a very short talk, then I'll do this. You can just share my screen again.
Okay.
This is the original mandate territory. This was all given to Israel, right, which includes much of Jordan. This is the original mandate territory assigned to the Jewish national home. The Israelis were willing to give up 75% of this land for peace. They gave it to the Arabs, right? This is what they took, right? 75% of that they gave up for peace, right? Now, of course, they've had to sacrifice the West Bank and, of course, the Gaza Strip. The greedy, genocidal Muslims want all of it. 75% was not enough. We've already seen that you've got Israel is surrounded by dozens of Arab countries that seem to not have enough space because they need this little bit of space that is left for the only Jewish state in the world. And of course, we know that the Muslims also want your space because they want France back. Because once they've invaded a place, now remember, the Muslims had invaded France in the 670s or in the early 1700s, about the 690s. So by the 690s, the Muslims had already invaded Spain and France. So here's a question. I wasn't aware that this was revenge for the French invading the Muslims, the Muslim countries. Muslims had invaded France in the late 690s, early 700s. and they had to be kicked out because they were invading everywhere, because they were a religion of peace, which is a complete lie. Islam's a religion of war. So once they've invaded a place, they are supposed to keep it. It's known as a waqf, an endowment given to them by Allah. If they lose control of it, they must gain it back for the sake of Allah. So they are coming for every place that they invaded, and every mosque they put down is a mosque is effectively a mission station. It is effectively like an embassy. That is land controlled by the Muslims. Muslims belong to the Ummah first and foremost. That's the Muslim nation before they belong to any country. Mm-hmm. So we are ceding ground to them, and they are taking ground. They want all of this. So this is me. Bring up one last slide here.
Yeah, the historical claims are interesting because, you know, it's funny. I saw the when the attack happened, they have the white people and the college kids on the script too, because I'll hear them saying, I'll have a conversation with like this random white dude from a small town in America that I grew up with that thinks he understands the conflict. And he's like, well, that was retaliation. When do you think the war started? You know, it was back when Israel was established. I'm like, wow, they got you on like the historical, like ancestral. No. I'm like, wow, crazy.
I notice. Yeah, exactly. No, their political campaign has been amazingly successful because they've spent billions in universities. In the last 6 years, if you go through the current figures, when I mentioned the college foreign gift reporting, they've spent $5.5 billion in the last 6 years. What do you think that money's bought them? Loyalty. Propaganda, influence, right? They control people's minds at this point. Where do you think nearly $6 billion goes, right? So look at this. This is Israel, okay? The white area, so the green area, these are Muslim and Muslim-majority nations. That is Israel. Somehow, they need
at what point? Because I don't think Ethiopia is. A large portion of it.
There's a large portion of that in
Somalia for sure, Sudan, Egypt.
Right. Now, the green area, according to the propaganda, is caves and camels, people with box cutters, a small minority of violent jihadis, apparently. They've got no money, no oil, no power, no political influence, and no space for the fakestinians to go. Because there's not like there's loads of freaking empty space in these places. So they have to push the Jews into the sea. Apparently. So, I mean, look, it's like, you know, I would say cry me a river to the sea. That's my view. Just cry me a river to the sea. Okay. So, and the white area here is Israel, which has unlimited money, unlimited power, and is taking up way too much space. See, that's the claim. Yeah.
Well, I think like the Israelis here, like the things that Israelis will tolerate and put their soldiers on the line for, are things that America would just not like. It would just like the things that they've allowed the countries outside of them to do is just unprecedented. And I don't want to laugh because it's not funny, because a lot of people have passed away because of the niceness and the kindness and the liberalness that a lot of the young people and the Tel Aviv and the capital city and like the liberalism has taught them, which is like kumbaya, you know, they love us and they're all good. And, you know, we just need to look for peace and concede. They just want to live in peace. It's like, nah, like at the end of the day, you got to read it how it is. And you have to observe the situation for what it is. Like they want it all. They don't want peace. They want peace instead of Israel. That's it.
Yeah. Yeah, that's my story. So hopefully I've provided a different perspective on this. This is publicly available information. You don't need CIA and FBI secret clearance to get this info. It's just something that people are willfully ignoring, and we are not being told basic facts. So the story, that really covers it for me. I think hopefully that's sufficient for people to understand. There's a completely different aspect to this. They've been lied to. The kids have been brainwashed. Kids are not okay.
People, I mean, the guy that set himself on fire, like there's people like cutting their hair.
Look, I mean, I've got a journalist friend. I've got a very good journalist friend. And he's like, you know what? That's we should cleanse the gene pool of people with that level of, you know, he's like, yeah, it's time we start cleaning up. He's unsympathetic in the extreme. It's really funny though, the way that he phrases it.
It's sad, but it's, I mean, I think it also has a lot to do with, this is like a completely different topic, but just a bunch of different angles of attack of Western culture that we identify with these causes more than family or God, but that's a whole nother conversation.
but that's really for me. I think for this, cool. I think give everyone plenty, and hopefully they'll realize they've been lied to, they've been propagandized, and the governments have been undermined by the Muslims who have so much money. It's shocking. These are nearly 50 countries that are doing this. It's not just one. Remember recently, so the Saudis had claimed, I mean, the countries have to do tax filings for how much money they've invested in the country. They claimed they had $250 billion or whatever in the US. There was a time under Trump. They claimed they had $250 billion. So when there was a dispute, they then threatened the US government. They threatened they would remove, everyone might remember this in the news, they threatened to remove $750 billion in funding from the US. Now, officially, they had 250. Unofficially, they then stated, we will take out $750 billion, nearly a trillion, from the economy and crash the US economy if you give us a hard time. So understand. So you understand these numbers. So the public numbers, what I've given you, public numbers, it's $5 billion. It could well be 15. It could well be 20. Because there are ways and means of only certain of these transactions are recorded when they meet certain rules. And it's not that hard to violate these rules. And as I said, a lot of people are bought off by not recording this correctly.
Yeah. So, okay. Thanks, man. Appreciate you coming back on. I think that was good info. Don't forget to check out his channel. It's just his name, Lord De Jong.
De Jong.
Pronouncing that right? Jung?
Okay. Yeah. Lloyd De Jong. Yeah.
Yeah, guys, thank you for coming on, man. Thank you guys for checking this out. Don't forget to like and subscribe. Peace.